Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Hey, welcome to Bustin' Balls. I'm Pat Caputo along with the webmaster, Evan Jenkins. The trade deadline has come. The trade deadline is gone. And we found out exactly what the Tigers did. As usual, the reaction's all over the place. Everything about the Tigers is a complete and total, hey, what the hell are they doing? And with this trade of Jack Flaherty, what did they get back? They didn't trade Scooble, which was predictable, but we talked about it for a whole month anyway. It was an obsession in the town. And what became clear to me is that the Tigers had a definite strategy here. There were a couple things, Evan, that they wanted to get done. They wanted to emphasize some things. They wanted to get a position player that was a left-handed hitter to play infield. They got that in Sweeney. They did want to get at least one high-end prospect, with a really high ceiling, and they did that in Lorenzo. Yet the town is, like, going crazy. Even some of the national pundits said they didn't get enough back. Actually, they did get a significant amount back for Flaherty. It wasn't like they didn't get anything. And in their other deals, they wanted to build a bullpen. They want a number of bullpen arms that are pure bullpen guys, and that's pretty much what they did across the board with their other deals. They needed an organizational catcher, and they picked one up in Liam Hicks to replace Carson Kelly as Dingler comes up. And they needed a left-handed hitting catcher, and that's what they got. I think he's more of a 4A type of guy in Liam Hicks, but that's what they did. So people freaking out about it like they didn't get anything. Yeah, they did. They did get a nice haul. They also, from their standpoint, and people can get mad about this, they also saved nearly $10 million in contracts by unloading a lot of these players they signed. They only paid them two-thirds on the money that their salary was. And if you add it up, it's $9.7 million that they saved with these moves. So Tigers did what they wanted to do business-wise, save money. They added for bullpen. That was clearly their strategy. And then they added a high-end guy and then somebody that could play in the major leagues as soon as this year. I'm expecting to see Sweeney in the major leagues at some point this year because they really don't have shortstops.
Right.
That's what they did.
Yeah, I think Pat, a lot of fans get used to the NBA trade deadline, the NFL, the NHL, where you see names being moved. And I think that this trade deadline was very similar to the MLB draft. And you're getting young guys that the average fan hasn't heard their name probably, let alone the team that they came from. And I think that they equate it to that. And they think back to the years of the Tigers trading their prospects for the likes of, you know, Miguel Cabrera or David Price or something along those lines. And they don't see that return, and so they overreact instead of sitting there and just being patient. Well, we have to realize with the Detroit Tigers is they're not winning this season, and they're still trying to build for the future. And Scott Harris is still trying to put together what he believes is a winning organization. And that starts from A-ball all the way to the major league level. And I think a lot of people are forgetting that, you know, they're housing, what, four or five baseball teams all together in an attempt to get the best major league talent on the big league field. And I think people may have overvalued Jack Flaherty, seeing that he's a hot name and then seeing, like, what the Astros traded for the Blue Jays pitcher. And then you see these reports coming out that the Yankees didn't like Flaherty's medical, so they backed off. I think Evan Petzl of the Free Press had a story saying basically the Astros offered that same deal for Flaherty, but they may have waited too long and got the deal that the Dodgers were looking for more so than the Tigers were looking for. And all of this is hearsay, and people are going to feed whatever information they want to get out there. But I agree with you, Pat. At 5:58 on Tuesday afternoon, I was like, oh my God, they're not going to trade him. But then they made that deal. And I think as much as people aren't going to want to hear this, we have to trust what the team is doing up until this point, because we don't have any reason not to, right?
Well, some would say you do have reason not to. I don't know. I'm not walking in that realm. Look, I went and looked at each one of these guys. I made some phone calls, and it's a little bit different than what people think. The object of this podcast isn't to give you what the rankings are. You can go look at the rankings all you want. The object of this podcast isn't to, sit there and act like, hey, man, I've heard of every one of these guys. But it's to know what to do, to look up what they are, to observe what they do, watch video on them, talk to a few people, and tell you what they actually are, why the Tigers acquired them. First of all, the one prospect that is a high-end guy, and you can talk about the trade for Kikuchi and all that, and what the Blue Jays got, the haul back, but the top-end guy with the highest ceiling, the higher ceiling any of those players they got back, is Thamron Lorenzo, the catcher that the Tigers are getting from the Dodgers. He was their third-ranked prospect. So the first thing people did is they went and looked and saw that he was struggling in the Midwest League this year. They didn't even look at what he did last year, and they don't understand the difference between the Midwest League and the California League, where he led the league in home runs last year. And of all the catchers in organized baseball last year, minor leagues, he had the highest OPS. So he was in a hitter-friendly league at a lower level, and he dominated. He came into the Midwest League, which is a pitcher-friendly league, in a completely different environment, faced better pitching, and has not put up the same type of numbers. But he does have a pretty high on-base percentage, fits into their mold, and this guy's got big-time power, big-time body. He's potentially a regular catcher in the major leagues. There was a reason he was the Dodgers' third-best prospect. That's who they acquired in this trade. So people's overreaction to that was ridiculous. They did get something back with a high-end ceiling. And I had heard of him, all right?
I also heard of trade. He just played in that Futures game as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good prospect. And Trey Sweeney is a name that, in the world that I run, is a name that I've thought, heard for many years, because he was a high-end draft pick. He was a 20th overall pick in the draft by the Yankees out of Eastern Illinois, and there was a lot of debate when he came out because he wasn't playing in the ACC and the SEC or, Pac-12 or whatever, Big 12, whether he was really worth taking him. He's a bigger infielder who's got good actions, and he can play defense well enough. He's a much better prospect than Ryan Kreidler, for example.
Okay.
All right, so you're going to see him maybe in the major leagues. And he's held his own in AAA this year. He's got 13 home runs, 62 RBI. What I can't figure out about him is that for somebody who was drafted that high, does have some tools and seemingly potential, why he's ranked so low. Now, what I was told, he doesn't hit the ball as hard as they want him to. His exit velocity numbers aren't that good. So they're not projecting him like they did when he was using the composite bat or whatever at Eastern Illinois. It hasn't translated. So for me, this particular player is somewhat puzzling why he's not ranked higher.
But can I ask a question about that, Pat? You talk about hitting the ball hard. And the only reason that this even brought up a question in my mind, because Spencer Torkelson, in his 3 years up with the big team, his exit velo was, he was hitting the ball hard. He was just hitting it at people. This is from a novice of a baseball fan that just watches it. I haven't covered it like you have. But wouldn't you prefer a guy that gets hits over a guy that hits it hard and is an out?
No, you want to have somebody who has exit velocity, because if they start to lift it, it'll project power.
Sure.
All right, the ball will carry. So if they get the ball, if they get the ball up in the air, it'll do well. If you don't hit the ball hard in the major league level, the players have so much range that they'll track down those balls, whether they're hitting the ground or hit up in the air. You got to hit them on a line and hit them hard. That way you can get them through.
Because that's what I was going to ask. Because, I mean, I'm going to date myself. But in the 90s, before the steroid era, there was, like, the days of the Tony Phillips of the world that hit 7 home runs a year, right? It seems like those guys are getting fewer and far between because everybody is trying to have this launch angle and this exit velocity. But that's the new baseball, isn't it, Pat?
No, the 90s was the height of the steroids era.
Well, I'm saying like just before it. Tony Phillips,
I'm not going to stop right here. Rip me, rest in peace. But how did Tony Phillips end up being a guy who was signed, could barely get the bat around or whatever, and he ended up hitting with a lot of power in the major leagues when he was a small dude? You take that for what it is, all right?
Okay.
Because exit velocity means a lot. And Sweeney, and I'm just telling you from what I was told, that he doesn't hit the ball as hard as they projected him to do it. And they don't, because of that, I think that's why he's been held down on prospect rankings. Because I think when they go and talk Pipeline or Baseball America to certain people, that'll be the one thing he's not. Because he's a pretty good athlete who, you know, I think he projects ultimately as a utility player, but he is going to play in the major leagues, and he's better than the shortstops from what I can tell that the Tigers have at the higher level of their organization, obviously, to me.
Yeah, and Scott Harris Tuesday night, he even made that point that, you know, we need shortstop depth in this organization.
Yeah, so it wasn't just a throw-in on there. I kind of like that, and he is – in the baseball industry, you know, like the world that I would be in with this prospects thing, just talking about it a lot, somebody that everybody knows. So these are two very familiar names in that realm. And even though the fans, there were none of the names that people heard coming into the trade deadline process, the Tigers did okay here. I'm not saying they got some major haul. But anybody who's saying they didn't get anything for it, they're full of crap, actually. They did reasonably well.
God, who did they trade for, like, Reese Olson? Remember they made that trade and everybody said
Daniel Norris.
Yeah, and look what they got. I mean, obviously he's injured right now, but Reese Olson was producing for the Tigers anytime he pitched.
This is a little different. Reese Olson, you know, was kind of like one of the list of guys that I'm going to mention now. And he happened to be somebody that they kind of struck gold with. That doesn't happen that often.
Right.
But, you know, you're going into that realm. That was a surprise. But Norris, they just ran out of patience with him, and it was just time to move him on. And, you know, they got something for him. Some one of their scouts noticed something, or their analytics people in Olson, and they turned out to be right. So it's not luck. I think the big thing that I have, just listening to a lot of the conversation on our radio station and the way people look at it and the way that I try to look, you know, try to tell you about it out there, all the people that are listening to this, it's not like prospect is, you know, something that's made at a factory, you know, like a certain size, a screw or wrench or something.
Right.
You know, it's not one stamp fits all type of proposition. They're all different players with different talent and everything. And the goal of your organization, with you have these big analytics departments and a lot of scouts, is to identify players actually that can play in the major leagues and to try to fit them together so that ultimately you'll look at it. Now, the Tigers right now picked up, I'm sitting here looking, 7 players at the deadline for the players that they moved. Kelly, Chafin, Canna, Jack Flaherty. So they picked up 7 players for their organization. And they did it in a certain way, it appears. They wanted to, with the big trade with Flaherty, to get a certain type of player. And they did that. They got a high-end prospect catcher. He's legit that way. And they got a shortstop that could play in the major leagues in the near future. And he'll probably see his major league debut if he does reasonably well at Toledo soon. The rest are relief pitchers. And of the relief pitchers, none of these guys I had heard of. Not one. All right? So that tells you what the prospect game is like, is for a media guy, I followed this pretty closely, right?
Yep.
So I want, and I went and I looked and I did my research on each of these guys. And it's pretty interesting to see there was a specific type of player they were looking for. The classic example is the player they got back in the Canna deal, the pitcher, Tyler Owens. And I did like a little YouTube short on this. But Tyler Owens is somebody that is a high school assignee, was what the equivalent of a three-star for baseball would be as a high school player. He was in the perfect game system, so he played in showcase tournaments. But even as a high schooler, he was projected as a reliever. He hits 98 on the gun, but he's only 5'10". So he throws on a downward plane, so they're going to have to change his pitch shape so that he throws straight, because he can't throw downward plane like that, because he throws right into the bats going up with these lift swings, especially at 5'10". So there is some work they're going to have to do with him, but he has reached AA, and he's got a real good, looks like tight slider with some spin on it. And the best thing about him is he's developed a split finger pitch. This is what I noticed watching him. He's got a good split finger pitch. And Evan, what that means is with that high velocity fastball, he has a pitch to put him away. He gets ahead in the count, he can put him away with that split finger pitch. And it moves. And it's a pitch that you get strikeouts in out of the zone. So I like that pickup. I understand exactly what they saw in him. And he has some potential that's pretty good. Pretty good, you know, pitcher. Now, all these guys, you know, like he had committed to Florida out of high school. He was from Ocala. And he's somebody that if he were to come out of the draft now and had gone to Florida at his age that he's at, he would be considered having moved pretty quickly. Do you understand what I'm saying at his age?
Yeah.
The other pitcher they got that looks like he's got a real good upside, and I was kind of intrigued watching him pitch here, it was Joseph Meltavo, the player that they got in the deal. He is somebody that these guys all miss a lot of bats. And Montalvo, the high school kid, somebody that he misses a lot of bats. He's got 75 strikeouts in 59 innings. And he projects with his body type to throw harder. He's got a real loose motion, a lot of carry on his fastball. Throws about 95 now, but I can see him throwing harder. And he's somebody that I think that they got that will do pretty well, has a chance. And he's more maybe of a starter type than some of these other guys, okay?
Okay.
But he could end up being a bullpen piece. So I like him a lot, possibly in the future. Eric Silva, the guy they got from Canna,
yeah,
is somebody who's pitched in AA. He's had some success. He's strictly a reliever. Again, a shorter type of reliever. You know, they list him at 6'1", but he doesn't look 6'1". And he's somebody that, again, has a high-spin fastball. I was a kid from Laguna Beach, California.
Oh.
Was signed to go to UCLA. Again, he's if he went to college and he were coming out now, he would be somebody that you would look at as a college kid who's gone pretty far. And he's somebody that's pitched in AA. So, and Scott Harris is familiar with him because he was with the Giants organization when they got him. So, while it looked they didn't get anything for Canna, I do think they did get something. for Canna right there. And then Chase Lee is an interesting pitcher. He's at Triple A right now. Yep. He's somebody you may see in the major leagues in the not-too-distant future. He's not a highly rated prospect because of his particular niche, and that is he's a side-arming, right-handed, situational specialist. Doesn't throw hard, only throws about 90 miles an hour. But he struck out in the minor leagues, Evan, 203 in 149 innings. And he has a very high repetition slider. I mean, he comes from the side, the thing really spins. And he's going to be really tough on right-handed hitters in certain situations.
Does he have a motion kind of like the person that came to mind was like Darren O'Day? I remember how much of a he was a fit for players with that sidearm motion.
He's kind of in between. He's not a real submariner.
Okay.
And he's not a real – he doesn't throw three quarters. But he comes from the side and presents himself as a nightmare for right-handed hitters. Okay. And that slider does really – you can see it. If you were to look at his slider and you were to look at, the rotation of it, as it, how the hitters react, it's very similar to what you would see from Jackson Job. And it's almost okay. Up into that 3,000 range. This is somebody who throws a 2,800 revolutions slider. Job is like 3,100, and that was like, freaked everybody out. But it gives you an idea of what this guy can do. And the strikeouts, he really whiffs a lot of right-handed hitters. They really struggle to barrel the ball up on him. And he's advanced.
And it's a completely different angle than what they're used to seeing. I'm surprised that coaches didn't try to change it. You don't see sidearmers.
Well, he's a college kid. He pitched at Alabama. So this is something that he did that there helped a high-level program when he was in college. This isn't a high school kid. This is somebody that probably developed that. I'm guessing on this, but it's an educated guess when he was at Alabama.
Okay.
That this wasn't something he did in high school. And I didn't check his high school background.
Okay.
So that I don't know. And I haven't talked to somebody who's told me what his development is. Just looking at him, if people go and look at every little bit of video on these guys, you'll know exactly what they are and why they got them.
Yeah.
This is all about building bullpen.
Yeah, and more and more I think about it too, Pat, why I think fans are, I don't know if it's angry or confused or whatever that might be. I think they're just jaded from the past with the...
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Deals of, the Verlanders, Martinez type deals like that where they don't think they got enough in return. But I think you can't compare what's happening today in 2024 to what happened back in, 16, 17, whenever that was. It's not the same deal, at all. You know what I mean?
Franklin Perez was a big-time, huge prospect. But that injury, again, it's a pitcher. So that, all of a sudden everything was gone. Rogers and Daz Cameron were okay prospects. Okay,
right.
They were in the Trey Sweeney category, kind of.
Oh,
all right.
Rogers okay. Has been up almost 3 years now. So
right, Daz Cameron's played in the major leagues this year too.
Yeah.
And so
I think it's just jaded. You know what I mean? I mean, Pat, you know me. I was born in 1983. I didn't see the '84 Tigers win it, so I've been waiting my 40 years to get a World Series championship, and so it's like. It just seems like they're kicking the can a year further down the road. But do you expect this team now, the position that they're in, with having the Tarik Skubal and some of these young guys that are coming up, you expect a healthy Green and Carpenter next year, that they spend a little bit in the offseason?
Well, you're getting into a realm there that people just don't understand about the Tigers. All right. And they, you know, I'm not trying to defend them on this. All right. They cause their own malaise.
Right.
But the Tigers are now a small market team in a mid market. Tigers are in the bottom third, maybe bottom quarter in terms of revenue. The Tigers for this year took in less revenue, or will at the end of the year, than the Pittsburgh Pirates. Only $5 million more than the Tampa Bay Rays. So, for the first time in a while, they'll actually turn a profit because of that. And in other years, they basically bled money. And people will say, I don't care. Illich can write a check for $100 million and do that. That's a bad business model. That's not going to work and never works right. In baseball. So the bottom line about it is that they need to get their act together. They need to be in a position where they can get themselves out of the rut of being a small market team when they're actually a large, closer to a big market team, mid-market team. So that's part of the problem. And because of the Javi Baez thing, and the Maeda thing now, that's almost $40 million right there. Yeah. So, going out in an unrestricted free agency and, you know, signing somebody and saying, oh, you know, you got to be the average salary, you got to do anything, isn't the way they're going to get out of that rut so that they can be back where they're viable and can play a little bit of big ball rather than small ball. Because they're a bad business model in addition to what they have on the field.
Now, having said that, do you expect them to get out of the rut?
It's going to be a hard go. Because Scott Harris is in a position where he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. You know, he's got some pieces. There is a core there. Outstanding player in Green, and he's just going to get better. And an outstanding pitcher, best pitcher in baseball in Skubal. They got a couple bats, Carpenter. Colt Keith, his development this year is very significant for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got some other pieces. Like, Verlaine's going to play for them for a couple years and play reasonably well. Wincel Perez, we'll see whether he's able to sustain what he's doing. And, you know, their catching situation should be okay. The situation with Torkelson, I don't know how that's going to play out. The situation with Casey Mize, right now he's in the middle of, like, it looks like him and the organization are at odds.
Yeah, so, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little strange. So all these different things have, you know, led to something, and Scott Harris has got to figure that out. What he's done so far that's been really good, I think their player development, they're finally caught up to other teams. Maybe they'll even surpass them. They've done such a good job that way. And they put the resources into that. But nobody cares about that, Evan. I care about it. The Bustin' Balls podcast crew here, you and me, we care about it. But you know what? Even I know, you know, the whole thing is with prospects, you've got to have a good major league team. You know, their attendance is low. You can get a Tigers ticket, Evan, honestly, you'll be able to get one for $5 coming up here. They've been $7 all year for weeknight games if you go just on an auxiliary market. Yeah. That means people who have tickets for them, they're trying to get something for them in return. Pennies on the dollar. You can't be that way.
It reminds me of my childhood, those early 90s. So all over
they
again.
Have to build something for 2025. But, you know, they're not going to get Juan Soto, all right?
No.
All right? That's not going to happen.
I think
or should they? Because he would be putting a hood ornament on a bad team. It'd be like Ohtani on the Angels.
Right.
So, you know, you've got to have a team before you really can do that. And you have to make value for value trades. I can't emphasize that enough. That's what Dombrowski was great at. The general manager that built the World Series team, Bill LaJoy, he was great at. And you have to use that as part of what you're doing. Now, this is a fairly sound philosophy of signing some guys so that your team can be reasonably good, all right? And then you flip them for prospects. They've got Hoyu Lee this way. You add minor league depth, but that can't be the only thing you do, all right? And an unrestricted free agency, you're paying retail. So you have, especially for hitters, Because any team that has a hitter tries to lock them up before they get to free agency. Pitching will be available. They'll be able to replace Flaherty probably.
Yeah.
All right? With another Flaherty or another Lorenzen type or whatever.
Mike Fiers.
But it's going to be hard to find a hitter. All right? Because if there's a good hitter out there, he's usually off the market. Look at what it was last year. None of those guys that people talk about and bellyache that they signed, they should have signed. So, except for maybe J.D. Martinez, that would be the exception. And, I don't think J.D. would have saved their season.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say is, even so, I mean, he didn't start until, 2 months into the year. And I don't think this team was only one player away from actually being a great baseball team.
But people don't understand this. The Mets' payroll, their payroll is more than the Tigers' revenue.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't. I mean,
the Yankees take in almost two times as much in Dodgers as the Tigers take in now. Again, that's in the Tigers, everything's flat. And it's not about a small market thing. It's because they've been such a losing entity here. They have their big niche of baseball fans, but the rest of the sports fans are just, they're angry with the Tigers, and justifiably so.
We had it so good for so long that when it goes bad, I mean, they're kind of in the same situation like the Red Wings are with the fans, that they want to win right now based on the history that they had over the last, 15, 20 years.
And Red Wings are way ahead of the Tigers.
Oh, I agree. With the unsatisfactory thoughts of the fans, it's based on their product of their own success, and that's the reason why some fans want to win now. And it's a longer process than you think. They're not the Yankees that they're going to go out and buy the biggest free agents every single year. And look at the Yankees. They haven't won since, 08, something like
right.
that?
Right. Well, there's a lot that goes into it, all right? Yeah. It isn't about how much money you spend. I mean, that argument that, has been thrown around at our station, I respect all my colleagues on it, but it's just utterly ridiculous. And then it's something that plays well with the fan base, The owner's not popular because the team is lost. But you mentioned the Red Wings. The Red Wings are a much stronger business model. Yeah. And are much further along, and their potential to do well is much better than the Tigers in the coming season, because they have a couple pieces that are in their prime, Larkin, DeBrincat, and two bona fide stars for their age, and Sider and Raymond. The Tigers are in a situation where they just got a couple guys here, and they're just starting to do things. But their rebuild has been 10 years. Eight years. So
I mean, 14 was the last time that they made the playoffs, and they got
right.
stopped.
16 was the last time they had a winning team and had a playoff run, chance at the playoffs. And that was foolish. After that, they decided to go for it. But I understood what Mike Ilitch was doing. He was late in life. And,
spent every last dollar if it meant that they got the Tigers a World Series. He wasn't. I'll never forget the time when they brought in Justin Upton. And they talked to him about spending money, and he opened up his wallet and he said, "I think I still got a few more 20s in here." And I was like, that's a guy that he understands it's the end of his life, and he wants to see a championship with this team. He saw it with the Red Wings. He didn't get it with the Tigers. And people can say what they want about Chris, but Chris has spent money. Go look at the money he spent on Rodriguez. Go look at the money he spent on Baez. He gave Jack Flaherty $14 million a year.
The problem is he hasn't spent it wisely. And that Al Avila, there were a lot of reasons that Al lost his job, but that was, probably the biggest was, the Baez contract and those, dumb things where the players have the option to leave if they play well, and you're stuck with their salary if they don't. So, they have to think smarter and be smarter. But they're in a rut, Evan. They're in a deep rut right now, and there is no easy out to this. The only out is that they cannot constantly put teams on the major league field that don't play the game the right way and don't win games. This is devastating. These last 2 months are going to be dreadful.
Oh, yeah.
All right? For the baseball fans. Dreadful. And the other fans, Are there, you're waiting for the Spartans to play. You're waiting for, you know, the Michigan fans are waiting for Michigan to play. And everybody's waiting for the Lions to play and football season to start. I'm talking about the people that are beyond the, you know, it's a pretty good-sized niche, baseball fans. But it's a big one, you know, but it's that's where they're at right now. So I'll be watching them and following them and telling you about these guys that they're doing. But, you know, you're going to be more interested in whether J-Mo can get deep.
Right. Well, I was going to say, what sucks the most is somebody like me, when Bally's went away, I've only been listening to games on 97.1 The Ticket. I didn't buy Bally's. But now today, Bally's comes back, and it's like the Tigers.
The 3 months of the season is gone, and all of a sudden they're back. And the Tigers have traded away anybody wanted to watch except for Smoove.
And Green's hurt. Carpenter's
Green's hurt.
No pitchers.
Yeah, you know, you get to see, you know, you ever seen the movie Training Day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, the Tigers, it's bullpen day.
Oh, yeah. Well,
if they're going to be a bullpen, they got to get all these guys. They might even have to bring up all these bullpen guys to pitch this year. I mean,
one promising thing. At least like last year and the year before, I would still look at the box score to see what Miguel Cabrera did. After every game, I always check the box score and to see what Cole Keith did. Like, he's really starting to come into his own. And
right. I mean,
he never faced major league pitching before this year. I think he's really coming into his own. He's showing.
Oh, he's going to be a good hitter. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're going to see the drop off like you saw with Tork, but for sure. But I'll say this, Evan. You know, the bottom line about it is the other day, and this sums up the Tigers. If they had won on Sunday, right? They had played pretty good ball for a pretty good period there, and they made up ground. If they had won on Sunday, they would have only been 4.5 games out of a wild card spot. All right. The next day, with 50 some games left in the season, almost 60 games, 57 games left, they pull Jack Flaherty from his start and bring up a minor league pitcher. Brian Sammons isn't a 4A pitcher, Devin. He's a minor league pitcher.
Yeah.
You understand? If he ends up being the star of their game, and it's a great story. And bless Brian Sammons, and he was the second pitcher they used that day. Brady didn't do well.
Yeah.
But bless him for being in the major leagues, man. It's quite an accomplishment. So don't think I'm knocking him. But he is, you know, just an evaluation standpoint, a minor league pitcher. And they're still in the fringe of the race.
Yeah.
They had a 7.6 chance of getting into the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. So at almost 4.5 games out, and they play – like Minnesota, or they play Kansas City coming up here and things. You know, and people are tired of that. It's worn on them. When they started out 18 and 13 and then all of a sudden went into clown ball mode, they're throwing the ball all over the place. They're doing all these goofy things. They have a triple play that you haven't seen in 90 years against them because their base runner runs on a stupid contact play to home plate and it doesn't stop, and the ball wasn't even hit on the ground. You know, and they're going up there to at bat and letting pitches go right down the middle, and then they're swinging at pitches in the opposite batter's box later in the count. I mean, it was just brutal. That's frustrating for people. I wanted to throw my shoe at the TV, and I don't have skin in the game like these fans do.
Right.
So it's like, you know, they've got to get out of this rut. And it's not going to be easy. And Scott Harris, there is a dynamic here where people expect the GM to turn it around right away. Maybe it's because of Brad Holmes or whatever. And so even though this guy hasn't even been on the job for 2 years, people are like, this guy's terrible. He's in over his head. You know, that type of thing. So when he makes a deal like this, which is actually pretty acceptable, all right, for Flaherty, people are like, man, they don't trust it. They don't trust the Tigers. And they're just in a spot where they're – Scott Harris has got to figure it out. It's going to take all his skills. I mean, you know, he did get a few more pieces to his team that he inherited than what was anticipated, I'm sure, when he came in. Because some of Al's draft picks did hit.
Yeah.
All right, you know, Scooble, obviously. Green is pretty good. You know, Carpenter from late in the draft. Colt Keith from later in the draft. But you know, some of the pieces weren't what they were meant to be, either in torque and in mize. I mean, yeah. You have 2 1-1s that don't hit. I mean, two of them. That's devastating, man.
It really is devastating.
I don't, maybe Mize next year can come back, you know, because it's the second year out of Tommy John. But I'm not holding my breath on torque. He's starting to do better down there. But he's a fielding liability.
Yeah.
So, you know, while they have some pieces, Malloy has done well, too. I mean, yes. I know his overall numbers, but you hit 7 home runs like that in that period of time. There's some upside there as a hitter, but he can't play in the field.
Yeah.
You know, so he's a DH. And they have to get out of, like, you know, trying to think they're reinventing the game. You know, this stuff about lineup flexibility and A.J. Hinch is like some mad scientist, you know, able to fit square pegs into round holes. The only manager that can do it is horse bleep. Well, actually, I can say horse shit on our podcast. Oh, yeah. So, you know, to me, they have to move out of that type of thinking, all right? And they have to think in a very processed way. And it can't just all be about player development. It has to be about starting to win some games and play the game right. Because Hinchy overall is a very good manager, I think, at the major league level. So you want, as a fan, that's not just a baseball geek, you know, to go down and watch the Tigers with some interest in it rather than, well, I'll go down there and it's a nice day in the summer.
Right.
You know, and I like to go down there and I can get a cheap ticket now, you know. Yeah. So, but anyway, appreciate you all listening. Don't forget to like our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to it. Download it at Odyssey.com. We're on the Google Play Store, the iTunes Store, obviously. Wherever you get your podcast, check us out, like us, all those different things. We do drafts, prospects, and future on all the 4 major professional sports. And, you know, I appreciate you listening. But all this stuff that I talked to you about today, and I've been answering questions, these are things that I really can't get to on my daily show. And so I focus in on it here on the podcast. So you got a lot more information and a lot better idea of who the Tigers got now. All right? You really do now. And I did, you know, give you some information there that maybe when you have an opinion about it, it gives you a better idea of what actually is happening and not just the kind of buzz and noise that goes on a lot with baseball and the prospects and all these sports. That's the aim of this podcast. Till next time, we'll see you.